Continuing discussion of Vishnu Sahasranam, name 844. Nirguna. Very important name to discuss. As in the previous session discussing this name, we went over the topics of how this is maybe the major point of disagreement between the impersonalistic Vedanta schools and the personalistic, or the, we could say the impersonalistic Vedanta school, because they all emanate from Shankara, although there are Shankaracharya, although there are various branches and sub-branches, and at least in theory, the explanations of what Shankara taught, the different schools of thought regarding that. And then we have the four major Vaishnava schools, who are sampradayas, which differ on the meaning of nirguna. It can't be denied that the Supreme is nirguna, which literally means without qualities. If we are to take Vedic literature as authoritative, which of course the Vedanta schools do, all the Astic schools do, that's the definition of the Astic schools. That's sometimes translated as theistic, but it doesn't really work. The translation from Astic to theistic and Gnostic to atheistic, it doesn't really work. There are different concepts embedded in the Sanskrit words and in the English words. Anyway, it's a very important word, and the proper understanding of it we shall continue to discuss. Yeah, it's very important because it comes up in Vedanta. Vedanta means the Upanishads. And yesterday, quoting from Shvetashvatara Upanishad, that nirguna, harihi nirguna sakshat. There are statements that hari is nirguna. In Bhagavad Gita itself, when Lord Krishna is describing in the third person, he describes Paramatma, nirguna, guna bhoktri cha. Just as in Vishnu Sahasranam, the guna brit is juxtaposed with nirguna. So in Gita also, nirguna, guna bhoktri cha. What's Prabhupada's translation of that? He transcends the modes of nature, and at the same time, he is the master of all the modes of nature. Bhokta. Srila Prabhupada has here translated this as master. Madhvacharya as is absolutely predictable, has commented on this, because Madhvacharya's whole Siddhanta is strongly based on refuting Shankara, Shankara's Kevala Advaita, and even the Advaita of Ramanuja, Vishishta Advaita. He doesn't like Advaita at all. So this term nirguna, if taken absolutely literally, without reference to context, literally means no qualities. So Madhvacharya has explained this. For instance, while commenting in his Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnay, he also comments on the Gita, because of course Gita comes within Mahabharata. In the ninth chapter of Gita, Krishna says, Avajananti mam murha manushim tanamashritam parampavam ajananto namabhuta maheshwaram. Krishna directly rejects the contention of those persons who think that he is a man, an ordinary man, or even an extraordinary man. Because he appears in human form. What to us appears to be like a human form. Actually, he doesn't have a human form. We have a Krishna-like form. Do you see the difference? We have a form like his, not that he has a form like us, because he's the origin. So yeah, he has a human form, that's what we call it, because we don't know about his form. Man is made in the image of God, is stated right in the beginning of the Bible. They get some things right. Well, they don't understand it. And so many scholars of the Gita, they don't understand also. So this could be analyzed in great detail. Manusham tanam, tanum ashritam. Taking shelter of they think that he takes shelter or he is encased in a material body. Not knowing, ajananta, they're called, such people are called mudhas. Krishna calls them mudha, which means a fool. And a fool means someone who's ignorant. So what don't they know that they're ignorant? They don't know his parambhav, his higher nature, that he is higher nature. They just take him to be a human. And that he is not a product of material energy, material elements, but he is the highest controller of the material elements. So this verse directly addresses the questions that are raised in the contention that the Supreme is qualityless. So Madhvacharya, quoting on Avajananti Mam Murha, states, Ishvaro hi jagat srashta. Sure. Ishvaro hi jagat srashta. Prabhu narayana virat. Bhutantaratma vigyeya saguno nirguno picha. Bhuta pralayam avyaktam sushushu nripasattama. Ishvara is the creator of the world, is the master, and he is called Narayana. He is called Narayana. He is great. He should be known as the being within all living beings, the indweller with all living beings, antaratma, bhutantaratma. This name also comes in Vishnu Sahasranam, antaratma. He should be known as being within all living beings as saguna nirguna, with qualities and without qualities. He has his own transcendental qualities, but he doesn't partake of the material qualities. Simple point to understand. And at the time of destruction of all the material elements, he remains unmanifest and sleeping. So So the points here to understand, Vishnu has all qualities and doesn't have qualities, or attributes, characteristics. These are other ways that guna can be translated. They, both terms are applicable to him because he is completely devoid of any material characteristics and is absolutely imbued with, or the embodiment of, all transcendental characteristics. And here refers to the Advaita. And again, when Madhvas refer to Advaita, the Advaita school, they don't only mean Shankara, they also mean Ramanuja, because Madhva didn't like even the term Vishishta Advaita. He didn't like that word Advaita at all. So he also scolded Ramanuja, of course, a few hundred years later. But the point, actually, it's not Madhva here, but it's the later commentators in the line of Madhva. He said, they take the two names separately, Saguna and Nirguna. But in the Madhva rendition of Vishnu Sahasranam, they take this as one name, to demonstrate that both things are there at the same time. And it's fully possible for him to have contradictory and apparently opposite attributes at the same time. And there's something else written here, but it's too small, so I can't read it. And then, yeah. And then, quoting here from Vishnu Sahasranam, Astula Anu Amadhyama Madhyama Avyapaka Vyapaka Ya Aso Harihi. So all these things, these names Stula and Anu, they just came in Vishnu Sahasranam. He's huge, he's tiny. He's not medium-sized. He is medium-sized. He's not all-pervading. He is all-pervading. Ya aso hari adi anadi. This is Hari. He's the origin of everything, but he has no beginning. Avishva vishva. He's not in the world, he is the world. Saguna nirguna. He has qualities, he doesn't have qualities. Ityade Vishnor eva te dharmaha. And so on and so on and so on. This is Vishnu, this is his dharma, his natural, inherent constitution. This is the way he is. You want to believe in God? Okay, what can you say about God? He's huge, he's tiny. He's medium-sized. He's not medium-sized. He's all-pervading. He's not all-pervading. And so on. And just before all these names, this series of names we had with opposites, we had the name Achintya. So just to demonstrate, he is inconceivable. You can't work it all out with your brain. The arguments between theists and atheists have been going on in Western civilization as long as there's any record of intellectual combat. It's there in India also. Even at the time of Mahabharata, there was one Brahmana called Charvak, different to the Charvak, who's more famous for having had a school of atheism. Maybe he called himself after that Charvak in Mahabharata, who spoke atheistically. So it's always going to be there. Atheism is always going to be there. And we can't work it out simply by our brain. That Ramanuja, he makes that point. He specifically makes that point that evidence of the existence of God, the Supreme Personality, we can't understand it by logic. You can't come to any proper conclusion. Tarko pratishtaha, in the Mahabharata states, and same in Vedanta Sutras, tarko pratishtanat. Simply by logic and discussion and debate, we can't understand. So Ramanuja says that the only evidence, reliable evidence for the personality of Godhead is Vedic evidence. And of course, one has to have the mercy of God in order to understand him. Even if one is a great learned scholar in Vedic knowledge, Vedanta Sarvabhauma was a great Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a great Vedic scholar. He, Gopinath Acharya, his brother-in-law, was amazed he scolded Sarvabhauma. You can't recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he's directly in front of you, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he quoted, Atapite deva padambuja, dvayam prasadale shanuga heta eva hi janati tatvang bhagavang mahim. No. Nachanya ekopi chirang vichinvan. Unless one is favored with even a slight drop of the mercy of the Supreme Lord, he cannot understand him. Even if one is highly intelligent and highly learned, he may go on lifetime after lifetime for eons and eons without understanding him, unless one has his mercy. So that is also required. Yeah. One other explanation of Nirguna has been given here. He supports and protects even those living beings who are invisible or unnoticed. So no one talks about them or thinks about them. Nowadays, in the days of microscopes and microbiology and electron microscopes, we can see small things. And so some people talk about them. Although if you go in the bazaar in Salem, I don't think you'll find people talking about, well, maybe they talk about germs, right? Some people may talk, the concept of germs has become known in human society. The germ theory of disease was a major breakthrough in biology, medicine. So even the tiny little beings that no one sees or cares for, at least in previous ages, people wouldn't have bothered about them. They're just so insignificant, and there may be so many humans like that, they're so insignificant that no one writes books about them or writes anything about them or doesn't care about them. They might as well not exist. Of course they have attributes, but no one cares. It's just as if they don't exist. So Vishnu protects them also. Quoting from Agneya Purana, Aguno aguna dehat vat saguno gunadharanat aishvaryadi gunat vat va vasudeva iti ritaha. Directly says, because Vasudeva is without material attributes, he has non-material qualities, and both are possible in him because of the achintya shakti. We'll call it achintya shakti, his inconceivable qualities. Now, I'm going to quote. It simply says from Shruti. Which Shruti? Oh, Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Yeah, now, if you listen as I read this out, you'll see that so many qualities are mentioned. And also the word nirguna is mentioned. Right, I quoted from Shvetashvatara previously. What was that? Sakshi? Sakshi, what was the next word? And then Nirguna. So now I'm going to quote the whole verse. Now, qualities are mentioned, and then it's mentioned Nirguna. So this has to be explained. Otherwise, Shastra will seem ridiculous. He's huge, he's tall, he's rich, he has many friends, but actually he doesn't exist. It sounds like nonsense. It has to be explained. The Advaitins explain it by saying that the qualities don't really exist. That's just some illusion. They take nirguna as definitive and all the qualities listed as illusory. So here we go. Eko, it's fairly well known verse. Eko deva sarva bhuteshu gurha. Sounds pretty personalistic, right? There's one God who is hidden in the heart of all living beings. Eko deva sarva bhuteshu gurha sarva vyapi, all pervading. That means no qualities, but all pervading is also a quality. Sarva vyapi sarva bhuta sarva bhutantaratma is the indwelling within every living being. Oh yeah, here we have. Karma dhyaksha sarva bhuta divasaha. He is the adhyaksha, the overseer of all karma, of all work. Sarva bhuta divasaha. Very similar to Sarva Bhutantaratma. He resides, it could be put the other way, all living beings reside in him. Aha, here we have Sakshi Cheta Kevalo Nirguno Cha. He's the witness, he is consciousness, he's one and only, and he's Nirguna. So, Madhvacharya, in his commentary on Vedanta Sutras, state that he raises the point that the Advaita school takes this word nirguna to say that Brahman is devoid of all qualities, all attributes. And he gives various reasons why it should not be understood. One of them is that a word takes its meaning in the company of words in which it resides. If a word comes up, then you have to understand it in the context. And I was just reading a book refuting atheism, in which one Oxford University professor of biology made this point with relation to the English word sugar. When the biologists are in the laboratory together, when they use the word sugar, that's used as a generic term to cover so many different compounds which are called sugars. But when they go for their coffee break and one of them says, pass the sugar, it's understood what's meant. It means pass the sugar. He wants to put more sugar in his coffee. And they're all biologists, and they generally use the word sugar in a different way to the way that non-biologists do, but they have no problem, they have no cognitive dissonance when they have to use it in an ordinary context, and they don't even think about how they're using it. Wittgenstein's word games, if you like. But this point is being made by Madhvacharya, and before him, long before him even, he's just citing the rule that words take the meaning is understood according to the context in which they are stated. So in this context, so many qualities of the Supreme Lord are being stated. And then he said he's nirguna. So what do we understand by that? That everything I've said up to you is nonsense. You might say that about Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says at the end, Sarva Dhamman Niyatam Kuru Karma Tvam. Do your work, your swakarma, your dharma. Shriyasva Dharma Viguna Paradharma Swanushtita. Don't give up your own dharma. And at the end, Krishna says, now give up all dharmas and surrender to me only. So does that negate all the rest of the Bhagavad Gita? It makes it all useless and meaningless. Everything has to be understood in context. Taking things out of context and trying to make a case is foolish at best and devious at worst. And that's what we're dealing with a lot of the time in discussions about philosophy, discussions about dharma, what should and shouldn't be done. Taking Srila Prabhupada's words out of context, interpreting it different ways. So, just to finish this discussion of Nirguna now, the name Gunabrit is followed by Nirguna. This clarifies, if we understand Nirguna, why is after Gunabrit, who has qualities, to clarify and emphasize that he is not part of or affected by the material gunas or qualities. This discussion, which we've had in the last 2 days about nirguna, it might be a little difficult philosophy for some of you, if not many of you, who are present here. You may not be very interested in it. I want to get back to the 10th canto of Bhagavatam and hear the nice discussions in the first chapter. Well, the first chapter has got so much philosophy. Vasudeva is speaking to Kamsa about how you change from body to body. That's there. It's not expected that everyone will be philosophically minded. After all, in Gita we have Raja Vidya, that word is there, and Srila Prabhupada translates that. Again, it can be understood in different ways, but Srila Prabhupada translates that to mean that this knowledge is transmitted among kings. And we actually see that at the beginning of the fourth chapter. When Krishna says, Evang Parampara Praptam, this knowledge was known, it was received in parampara, in a chain of succession. So the succession, the beginning Krishna has described, that he spoke to Vivasvan, Vivasvan spoke to Manu, Manu spoke to Ikshvaku, and in this way, this knowledge came. So this knowledge is meant for the philosophically minded people. Kings are also supposed to be philosophically minded because they're supposed to rule on behalf of the Supreme Lord, and they're advised by brahmanas, and they should be able to understand why brahmanas are giving advice. So they had to be grounded in the same understanding. So it's not expected that everyone will be philosophical, but it is necessary to discuss this philosophy. Srila Prabhupada gave the example several times that in the university they keep open the philosophy department even if very few people go. Nowadays they don't, because universities are just for... it's another money-making enterprise, and the governments, at least the government of India up till recently, wasn't interested in promoting any studies which didn't have any direct relevance to the country's material development, and philosophy doesn't fall in that category. But at least when Srila Prabhupada was school-going, they had a philosophy department and in the university, and Srila Prabhupada said, even though many people don't go, but still it's kept open because it's very important. One country, at least the last time I visited France, which was about 5 years ago, I was told that philosophy is a compulsory subject in the schools in France. They're proud of their philosophers, some of the worst philosophers, I mean really. One of the most famous recent philosopher is Jean-Paul Sartre, who himself predicted that my teaching will be used to cause terrible damage to others. I'm paraphrasing, he said it in French anyway. And actually that happened. One of his students was Pol Pot, who became the communist dictator of Kampuchea. And if you know anything about the recent history of Kampuchea, he led a massive genocide of his own people. So anyway, in France, they have philosophy courses. And the main philosophy is, in France, what is eating nice food with lots of, what we wouldn't call it nice, and sex. It's the same philosophy all over the world. It's what all the philosophers do, right? Bertrand Russell, another great philosopher, was known as another philanderer. Real philosophy begins with sense control. So anyway, not everyone can understand so much philosophy, but some people should. And those who just want to do bhakti and chant Hare Krishna and be happy, great, you're welcome. But you also need to at least understand the concept that the Supreme is the personality of Godhead. And even if you don't follow all the arguments and you don't have the understanding of why Nirguna refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as much as the name Guna Brit does, and it doesn't impersonalize him. Actually, you should have some understanding, at least some rudimentary understanding. But at least you can be assured that there are others who can support this position. Because it's likely that someone's going to come and say, well, actually, the Supreme is impersonal. Brahman is impersonal. See, it says right in Shvetashvatara Upanishad. And then, then you become all upset. And you think, oh, maybe all this bhakti is wrong. Actually, everything is impersonal. So at least you should know there's someone who knows and can give the arguments. And then you can chant Hare Krishna and be happy. There's so many discussions and arguments going on. And not everyone gets into them in great detail. But someone has to, you can't get into every controversy that comes up. But someone should negotiate their way through the minefields of specious and fallacious arguments to bring out what is proper siddhanta, because bhakti siddhanta viruddha arasa bhas shunile nahoi prabhur chiter ulash. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not at all happy when anyone spoke against the proper conclusions of devotional service or brought in what's the translation of rasa bhas? Distasteful mellow, something, I can't remember the exact word that Srila Prabhupada uses. Okay. Now you can chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And be assured that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when you say personality, really mean it. It's not just something flickering on the water, some flickering is there on the water, which is not really light, it's just some reflection. Yatha bhaso yatha tamaha. That is illusion. Seeing some flickering of light, some reflection of light in the darkness. But no, Krishna is the light. God is light and much more. Hare Krishna. It's not a difficult thing to understand. He has no material qualities. That's all. Otherwise, who are we praying to? It's a funny thing, isn't it? They have in Islam, they vociferously deny that Allah has any personality, but they pray to Him five times a day, or three times if they're Sunni Shias. Actually, most of them don't pray five times or three times or once a week minimum. But they pray to Him, but they don't accept He's a person. In the Quran establishes that the Supreme is the Supreme Personality with a blackish form. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyascha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha dante nithaya chunakam padayone patya kritva chakha kushatam etat aham bravime hey sadhava sakala eva vihaya durad gauranga chandra charane kuruta nuranaha parivadatu jano yata tata va nanumakaro navaya. Hari rasa mabira madati mata bhuvi vinutama natama niravishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.